All right, make sure you're in fellowship. Going back to Roman numeral 6, subpoint E. The Kathib, what is written, is Isaiah 31, 1 through 10. What was read, the carry, was Isaiah 31, or 35, 1 through 10. What was read was Isaiah 31, 1 through 10. 35 makes better sense. It is the millennial future for Zion. Everything is personified, even the creation, in regards to joy and happiness, etc. You can read it on your own. I found happiness in the other verse, so I guess happiness is comes through righteous judgment, etc. All right. We're Roman numeral 7, dealing with the cosmic approach to happiness. Again, this list, while things in and of themselves may be legitimate, this is the things that the cosmos does build their happiness on. It is their foundation for happiness rather than the right foundation that the adjusted believer is supposed to have in regards to their happiness. And we're looking at Roman numeral 7, subpoint B, point 3, where we left off. Happiness is found in military victories, deliverance in that respect. Isaiah 9, 3. During Christ's reign, the millennium, you shall multiply the nation. They shall increase their gladness, looking at military strength, protection as provided by Christ. They will be glad in your presence as with the gladness of harvest. We read that earlier. For the details of life in general, Proverbs 27:9. If I just have this, I just have that, I'll be happy. Well, maybe temporarily. Details of life, including friendships, which is the next point, 1-5, 27-9. Oil and perfume make the heart glad. Those things that are kind of extravagant that one enjoys over and beyond living grace blessings. Obviously, these things brings happiness to us. So a man's counsel is sweet to his friend. To have a good friendship, a good relationship, brings about joy. 6, entertainment. We would say Funsville. Again, to iterate, these things in and of themselves are not evil. Luke 23:8. Much of Jesus' miracles in his ministry was made out to be entertainment by those who observed these things and saw these things. Herod had heard, and he also wanted to be entertained. Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. Show me one of your magic tricks, Jesus. 7 are achievements in life, whether in profession, work, physical, academic, job, etc. 1 Corinthians 9:25. Here in the background, obviously, the importance of running the spiritual race with the athletic metaphor in view here, recognizing the normal pursuit of life in this vein, verse 25, and everyone who competes in games exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Obviously, it's the goal is to get the gold medal, as we would say, to be victorious. This is how people build their happiness, to leave their legacy of life. Let's see. 8, unexpected good fortune. To have a boon over and beyond the normal things of life. That brings about happiness. Proverbs 15:30. Bright eyes, glad in the heart. Good news puts fat on the bones. Bright eyes is either big eyes, wide eyes for receiving something unexpected. Some of the more twisted things that brings happiness to people. Point 9, the adversity or unhappiness of others. Proverbs 24:17. That is not to be our attitude when we see people suffering, even those who may deserve it, such as our enemies. The admonition is verse 17, do not rejoice when your enemy falls. And do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles. We are not to get our kicks out of other people's misery and failures in life. See? You may recognize God's justice, his hand in the situation, things of this nature. You can rejoice over the doctrine being fulfilled, God intervening, but your personal attitude towards the individual is to remain, if you will, at the very most static in regards to your situation. The adjusted believer continually carries compassion about as part of their clothing in life, recognizing that these things that occur are brought about by Satan's world. And that is the ultimate force behind their negative volition, making their life miserable otherwise. 10, we are not to rejoice in anti-Semitism, to be anti-Semitic, as many on the world and the world remain today. Jeremiah 50, verse 11. Because you are glad, because you are jubilant, O you who pillage my heritage. That is, the enemies of Israel who take great satisfaction in trying to oppress them as a people, if not outright destroy them. Because you skip about like a threshing heifer, and they like stallions. Their braggadocious ways, being tickled over bad things that happen. We recognize again, the Jewish population has brought much upon themselves based on their own negative volition, etc. But at no time are we to be anti-Semitic. We recognize that in spite of their distraught spiritual condition today, that's going to change. And these are still God's chosen people. He has a plan for them. And His plan recognizes a boon of positive volition that will show itself eventually in regards to them as a nation. And it is the geography of rulership for the very person of Jesus Christ in this vein. So you see a lot of this out there, and that is in a mixture of the Jews doing really screwed up things otherwise, Israel as a nation. Many of the more evil people of this world are Jewish. Yeah, so is the Sanhedrin. But still there was positive volition that existed in Israel, as minute as it might have been. So, 11, doing good to others with a human viewpoint agenda. To draw one's happiness in humanitarianism. Not in the sense of righteous humanitarianism, and that is, this is the way God decrees it to be. But simply the aspect of trying to work their way into heaven or to look good, many other narcissistic motivations that one finds in regards to why people will often involve themselves in humanitarian acts. It is all to be tailored with and in line with Bible doctrine, whatever application one makes. We recognize the difference between divine good and human good. Human good is operating under your sin nature, and it is not in step with the truth of doctrine. The idea that we are to feed the world. Things of this nature. The directives given to the church in this regards, and Israel as a nation, are first and foremost for their own. Those who go to a local church, you help provide them living grace and things of this nature. We're not some social welfare entity that God has established for political and government reasons. That is one that the church is really enmeshed in today under their lukewarm scenario and syndrome, because they refuse to align with divine good. They are steeped in human good. And many religions do this, not just Christianity. Many people, evil in their very existence, involved themselves. So the Shriners are a good example. The Shriners are despicable in regards to, as an organization, in regards to what they stand for as a branch, if you will, the Masons, etc. I've known some in my past. I've heard stories in regards to some of the antics that they pull and do and promote. But yet, you know, they'll help out sick children. Well, what is this? This is facade. It's a facade to cover up their real agenda. Luke 6:33. Socialism is another big human good agenda of Satan, which is completely against biblical authority. God blesses whom He chooses to bless. you don't like who you work with, quit. Move on. You don't like the doctrine? Well, go somewhere else and get the doctrine you want. We don't suggest it. We think it's a great mistake, but, you know. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. So it shows a satanic agenda of human good, see, which I've brought out before. One of the ways to gain notoriety, power, accolade, is to donate millions of dollars to some charity. Some charity that is tax exempt, and the people that run the charity are driving around in their Mercedes and their Lexuses, and only 50% of their money is actually going to the need. I've been in the business I was in before. I saw that. I knew that. We had one charitable organization. The owner of my company, he was a fundy, and he would engage in that type of human good, and he would give really cut-rate deals on office space for certain charities. Well, all of a sudden, the office space isn't good enough for him. They have to have a higher class, you know, of existence, etc. Anyway, most of us recognize the existence of these types of agendas that are out there. See, all these factors are merely temporary things that stimulate those that are negative, and then these things fade away. The fact that they're temporal in nature says that they will eventually be destroyed or diminished in some form or fashion. And people that build their happiness on these types of things, it stimulates their STA, but they have no real foundation in regards to their happiness otherwise. Their whole life is a roller coaster. If it's good things are happening, they're happy. If bad things are happening, then they're miserable. See, D, as their blessings pass and dissipate, so does their transitory happiness. Whether it's relationships, professional, educational pursuits, details in life, etc. Get your new car, somebody scratches it in the parking lot. Ah, your whole world collapses. See. So the moment pressure or boredom threatens their happiness, they react and lose their joy. Happiness of such nature as a foundation is unstable. And so that will be reflected in people's emotions. F, they must then pursue some other item that they suppose will bring them lasting happiness. Again, we recognize this. We kind of coin it in the doctrine of reversionism under the frightening search of happiness. Everybody's frantically looking at that which will satiate their emotions. And in that way, whether it's twisted or more normal, they consider themselves happy, joyful. And when one thing crashes and burns, then they got to go after something else. One must learn to acclimate to one's niche, look to God for their ultimate happiness in all things, and then all of a sudden, when those things don't go right, according to your plan, maybe happiness will still reign in your life otherwise. And often it may be why things don't come about is because one is not persistent and consistent in looking to God for happiness. They're looking for work or for educational pursuits or relationships rather than, if you will, being satisfied with the fact that you're on doctrine, you're growing up spiritually, you're accumulating SG3 and your orientation to it. God has everything under control. He'll bless you when the time is right, you know, as long as I keep my priorities intact. If your priorities aren't intact, then you need to make some adjustments, see. So G. E. Haver, since Bible doctrine is the only thing that will bring true and lasting plus H, and they do not pursue her, the wisdom, personified as the female, they are designed to be caught in an endless cycle of happiness, boredom, frustration, and the pursuit of more happiness. That is the emotional instability that is characterizes this type of approach to life. Even those who may gain, you know, excess in regards to things still aren't happy. I've probably said before, you know, my boss that I had in my pre-pastoral days, his happiness was his job, his business. He immensely wealthy, yet he didn't enjoy any of it. He never took vacations. His vacation was, well, I'll come in at noon today instead of 5 or instead of 8 or whatever, see. Well, here, you work for the money. I'll show you how to use it. Let me have some of it. I'll show you how to use this stuff. But that is the way it is. And, you know, it doesn't, we're not talking down in regards to good work ethics, hard work, et cetera, et cetera. But when these things become your sacred cow, your God, then it robs you in regards to the capacity to enjoy life. H, our final point here, while items in 1 through 8, as I've been stating, in and of themselves are non-simple and can be a source of blessing and joy for the adjusted believer. The believer's plus H is not dependent upon their presence or absence in any given time in their Christian life. If you have it, fine. If you don't, fine. Paul himself denoted his adjustment. At times he had much, at times he had little. But in all cases, he found that the key to the whole thing, that he was happy and joyful in regards to being in God's plan and performing God's plan for his life, that he was satisfied in all these things. That is part of growing up spiritually. Learning to be satisfied, content with what God has provided us. Again, it doesn't mean that one cannot advance themselves and things of this nature, but their spiritual priorities must remain intact. It's not ever at the compromise of Bible doctrine. And then our closing verse is in Nehemiah 8:10b, "Do not be grieved, for the joy of the Lord is your strength." So it gives you spiritual muscle to draw upon and have, possess, and draw upon plus H in regards to your work out in life. All right.